You're not gonna say it, somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone dogs and are they in harmony? You're a helpful snowman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to a show. We have a few things that we need to do today. We have a game we can try today. I found this book someone had put on a... I manage this staff recommendations shelf at work. I'm like trying to bring it back like they had at the video store, right? And you're like, oh, this is so-and-so's shelf. And you're like, oh, that person's a real asshole. And then you've got so-and-so's shelf and they're like, oh, so-and-so thinks they're really cool. So I read a description of a book that was kind... I just found it very entertaining. So it's like a young adult series. The first one is called Shatter Me. And it's like these young... What did they call it? Sad Girls in Pretty Dresses. This was like a huge trend in young adult literature, was called Sad Girls in Pretty Dresses. And it would basically be a picture of like a young female model in some kind of like a medieval dress or prom dress or shit. It's called Shatter Me. And on the cover, it says, my touch is lethal. And that's like got a strike through line. And then it says, my touch is power. So the description is, I have a curse, and that's crossed out. I have a gift. I am a monster, crossed out. I'm more than human. My touch is lethal, crossed out. My touch is power. I am their weapon, crossed out. I will fight back. Juliet hasn't touched anyone in exactly 264 days. Well, I mean, that sounds like a typical interval between romance for me, but fine. The last time she did, it was an accident, but capitalized the reestablishment locked her up for murder. No one knows why Juliet's touch is fatal. As long as she doesn't hurt anyone else, no one really cares. The world is too busy crumbling to pieces to pay attention to a 17-year-old girl. Diseases are destroying the population. Food is hard to find. Birds don't fly anymore. And the clouds are the wrong color. I don't know why. Does this mean that there are no birds or that they're like walking around? For some reason, the concept of birds just kind of walking, not hopping around, not sort of hopping and then going into the flight, but just strolling. They see me strolling. I'm a bird. The reestablishment said their way was the only way to fix things, so they threw Juliet in a cell. Now so many people are dead that the survivors are whispering war, and the reestablishment has changed its mind? Maybe Juliet is more than a tortured soul stuffed into a poisonous body. Maybe she's exactly what they need right now. Juliet has to make a choice, be a weapon or be a warrior. So already this is hilarious to me, because it's like, these things are so funny because the concept is, okay, the concept is like, first of all, ripping off from X-Men, right? Sounds like Rogue. Touch someone and they'll die. But also, how much more powerful if you have a single individual 17-year-old girl who can touch people and they die? Or you could just give like a whole army of 17-year-olds handguns, which also kind of kills people by touching them, right? I mean, is it that different? I don't know. Let's go to Destroy Me. I'm trying to figure out which one of these books I saw. So this is book 1.5, which is weird because it came out in this order. So why is there 0.5s? I don't know. But here's 1.5 is Destroy Me. See, I thought it says 1.5. So I would have thought, well, the series went 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever. And then she was like, I want to do some fill-ins. So let's do 1.5. perfect for the fans of Shatter Me. Oh, is this maybe like real short or something? 109 pages, maybe that's why. Perfect for fans of Shatter Me who are desperately awaiting the release of Unravel Me, this novella-length digital original will bridge the gap between these two novels from the perspective of the villain we all love to hate, Warner, the ruthless leader of Sector 45. Too much already. In Shatter Me, Juliet escaped from the reestablishment by seducing Warner and then putting a bullet in his shoulder. But as she'll learn in Destroy Me, Warner is not that easy to get rid of. Why wouldn't she? Okay. For story reasons, I guess. I was like, why wouldn't she just touch him and kill him? Warner must do everything in his power to keep his soldiers, oh wait, back at the base and recovering from his near fatal wound. Warner must do everything in his power to keep his soldiers in check and suppress any mention of a rebellion in the sector. Still as obsessed with Juliet as ever. Oh, because they are in love. His priority is to find her, bring her back, and dispose of Adam and Kenji, the two traitors who helped her escape. But when Warner's father, the supreme commander of the reestablishment, capitalized, arrives to correct his son's mistake, it's clear that he has much different plans for Juliet. Plans Warner simply cannot allow. A lot of nonsense there. That's not the one. I'm looking for the one because there's one of these that I read and it was just like, she's queen of the universe and it's really hard and whatever. Okay, here's Unravel Me. So now this is two, but it's also three. The thrilling second installment. It should have taken Juliet a single touch to kill Warner, but his mysterious immunity to her deadly power has left her shaken, wondering why her ultimate defense mechanism failed against the person she most needs protection from. Dun, dun, dun! So that's why. I guess maybe that's why she shot him. Although, it's just funny because, like, I'm reading the description. I'm like, why don't you just give them guns and they can just shoot each other? And then it's like, well, her ultimate power didn't work, so she just shot him. Oh, okay. I hadn't thought of that. This would be like if they had an action movie like, okay, Demolition Man has this big denouement where Sylvester Stallone freezes Wesley Snipes and then kicks his head off and it smashes and shatters on the ground and it's awesome. But this would kind of just be like if he just shot him and then he's like, well, let's do that. She and Adam were able to escape Warner's clutches and join up with a group of rebels, many of whom have powers of their own. It's almost like they are former humans, X-Men, if you will. Juliet will finally be able to actively fight against the reestablishment and try to fix her broken world. And perhaps these new allies can help her shed light on the secret behind Adam's and Warner's immunity to her killer skin. Oh, Adam's also immune. Doesn't seem that killer if there's a bunch of immune people. All these, like, dudes. All these hunky... Turns out being a hunky dude is the only... Juliet's world is packed with high-stakes action and tantalizing romance. Perfect for fans of the Red Queen series and the Darkest Minds trilogy. Somebody, okay, blah, blah, blah. That wasn't it. Let's just keep going. Here's Fracture Me. Oh, this is 2.5. Jesus fucking Christ. This is also a... Oh, this is a 62-page. That's bullshit. In this electrifying 60-page. I mean, if you give me a 60-page, it better be good. Let's see how much it costs. I'm not going to complain about it if it's like $2. But I gotta know. For fuck's sake. Amazon and Goodreads. Amazon owns Goodreads, and a bunch of the Goodreads links to Amazon are like not working. Okay, it's $3. That's fine. Is that what this is called? Fracture Me. But it's listed as book two, but it's 2.5. Okay, whatever. No one gives a fuck. Discover the fate of the Omega Point rebels as they go up against the reestablishment. Set during and soon after the final moments of Unravel Me, Fracture Me is told from Adam's perspective. Isn't this what Twilight Lady did? She tried to do this short the series of unfortunate short lives of Brie Tanner or something. As Omega Point prepares to launch an all out, such a funny. What would be a good name for like a military thing? Omega Point. Omega Point Alpha Dog. As Omega Point prepares to launch an all-out assault on the reestablishment soldiers stationed at Sector 45, Adam's focus couldn't be further from the upcoming battle. He's reeling from his breakup with Juliet. Scared for his best friend's life, okay, and as concerned as ever for his brother James's safety. And just as Adam begins to wonder if this life is really for him, the alarms sound. It's time for war. This is a beef I have with this type of literature, which is always like, there's always a romantic element. And I often have this beef with different types of media, but I'm kind of like, listen, I don't know if I actually give a shit about like the romance happening between two teens in a world where like birds are walking around and cannot fly anymore. Like, don't you have something better to do? It's like when I played, what's that space game where you just talk to people all day? Sector 7 or something. I don't know. You like blow up planets and shit. You drive a terrible car. God damn it. Mass Effect. And it's like, the universe might be ending. Let me see if I can get this guy laid by a robot alien. That seems like a priority. On the battlefield, it seems like the odds are in their favor. But taking down Warner, that's a Hunger Games knockoff phrase. But taking down Warner, Adam's newly discovered half-brother? They're related? Oh, well, that's why they're both immune. I solved the mystery. Won't be that easy. The reestablishment can't tolerate a rebellion, and they'll do anything to crush the resistance, including everyone Adam has ever cared about. Fracture Me sets the stage for Ignite Me, the explosive finale in this dystopian series. Now, I don't think that actually turned out to be true. Because that's book 3, and there's like book 6, and some more point fives. Don't allow. How come every website is like, we want to send you push notifications? Like, I'm going to be like, oh yeah, that sounds good. Seems like a reasonable thing. For me to get push notifications from some shithole website. Fuck off. All right, here's number 3. With Omega Point destroyed, you know, you can really just read the summaries of these and kind of get the beats. I'm sure I'm missing something, but Juliet doesn't know if the rebels, her friends, or even Adam are alive. But that won't keep her from trying to take down the reestablishment once and for all. Yeah, why would it? Now she must rely on Warner, the handsome commander of Sector 45, the one person she never thought she could trust, the same person who saved her life. He promises to help Juliet master her powers and save the dying world, but that's not all he wants with her. I'm gonna guess that he wants S-E-X. That means sex. That's my short for sex. In case you're listening to this and can't spell, this would be an interesting way for you to go about it. All right, let's try Shatter Me 4. These descriptions are getting very short, and they're not including like so-and-so says such-and-such. Juliet Ferrars thought she'd won. She took over Sector 40. Oh, I think this was it. Juliet Ferrars thought she'd won. She took over Sector 45, was named the new Supreme Commander, and now has Warner by her side. But she's still the girl with the ability to kill with a single touch. And now she's got the whole world in the palm of her hand. Oh, I see what you did there. When tragedy hits, who will she become? Will she be able to control the power she wields and use it for good? I'm curious how she's planning to use the power to touch people and kill them for good. This seems like that classic move of, I designed a super laser that can cut the earth in half. I never dreamed that this would be used for evil. And you're like, you didn't, huh? You that never occurred to you? Perhaps this would be used for nefarious purposes? Huh. that it just came to me now that a thing that really only has use to kill to create a mass extinction event. I mean, the power to kill people by touching them. The only thing I could think that you could do that would be good is like, you know, you could work at a hospice, right? And just walk around and touch people and finish them off. That seems like the only possible good use of that power. And even that seems a little bit trying and difficult, but at least it's something. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to assume that when she touches people, they don't like explode in blood and stuff and like in horrible pain, that they just kind of like dry up and die like a mummy or something. Okay, so here's 4.5. Fan favorite character Kenji Kishimoto narrates this gripping companion novella. Juliet is still reeling from Warner's betrayal, and Kenji is trying to balance his friendship with her with his responsibilities as a leader of the resistance against the reestablishment. Things get even more interesting. Huh. Never could have thought that's possible. When an unexpected person from Omega Point's past surfaces. The ending of Restore Me left readers gasping, and this novella full of Kenji's signature sass and big heart is the perfect story to tide fans over until Defy Me, the shocking fifth book in the Shatter Me series, hits shelves in April 2019. That just happened. Whoa. All right. Defy Me? Is that next? I guess so. The gripping fifth installment, Jesus Christ, will Juliet's broken heart make her vulnerable to the strengthening darkness within her? Juliet's short tenure as the Supreme Commander of North America has been an utter disaster. Oh, this is the one. This is the one I read. Okay, Juliet's short tenure as the Supreme... Now, I wish I'd just started with this because it's like, it would have been fun to read this and go backwards and be like, what the fuck? So pretend, just clear your mind of what we've read so far and imagine going into this cold. Juliet's short tenure as the Supreme Commander of North America has been an utter disaster. When the children of other world leaders show up on her doorstep, she wants nothing more than to turn to Warner for support and guidance. But he shatters her heart when he reveals that he's been keeping secrets about her family and her identity from her. Secrets that change everything. Juliet is devastated, and the darkness that's always dwelled within her threatens to consume her. An explosive encounter with unexpected visitors might be enough to push her over the edge. Or it might not. Or, like, she, when the children of other world leaders... Why? What the fuck? Why are they there? Why are they coming to her? What's going on? And it's also, this is like... such a this kind of book thing where it's like, who should be the Supreme Commander of North America? I don't know, probably like a 17-year-old girl who kills people by touching them. That seems like a reasonable... Well, if you've got the power to kill people by touching them, that's a pretty good qualification for Supreme Commander of North America. What the fuck? Oh, and it's so... Turns out, guys, it's pretty hard being... She thought it would be all fun, and it's actually not that fun to be whatever. All right, here's book 5.5. Reveal Me. The explosive revelations in Defy Me have left readers reeling and desperate for answers. I love these descriptions that are like, remember how you felt reeling and desperate for answers? This fourth and final novella in the series will bring readers back to the world of Shatter Me before the final novel installment hits shelves in winter 2020. Yeah, right. And don't miss Find Me, the gorgeous paperback bind-up that brings together Shadow Me and Reveal Me in print for the first time. Wow. Okay, so here's Imagine Me, which I guess is like the upcoming. So far, it's a 4.45 with 85 ratings on Goodreads. And all it is there's a title. The title. Great title. This is crazy. There's no description. Do you think the Amazon link does not work? Amazon, you own Goodreads. You should be able to do this. Searching it doesn't help either. That's okay. Do we really care? Do we really think this is over? Nothing is over. Let's be honest. I found it very hilarious. For no real reason, I just thought it was great. And I don't know. I cannot read those titles and take it seriously. It has nothing to do with it being a teenage girl character. It has nothing to do with, like, the drama of it. It's just sort of like, when I see something like that, I think I could enjoy it if it wasn't taking itself very seriously, if it was like, this is kind of ridiculous and fun. And I feel like this probably isn't ridiculous and fun. I feel like this is, like, overwrought and tense. And I imagine the person writing this, and I'm just sort of like, oh my God, I hope that you are 22. Because if you're like 40 and you're writing this, I mean, you have to be a cynical bastard, right? And you're just like in it for the cash. To have written like 7 books in a series. How can you write like 7 books in a series like this? Where it's just like, there's a girl who can touch people. What else? Let's see, just throwing ideas out here. America's all fucked up. The world is fucked up. Birds don't fly. They walk now. Clouds are the wrong color, which I guess is not on the gray-white spectrum. It, by the way, in the description, it doesn't even say what color they are. It just says the wrong color. It defies logic. I can't tell if this series is supposed to be defying logic, if that's what it's doing. If I'm supposed to be like, everything is topsy-turvy, cats and dogs living together, you know, or if it's like, also clouds are the wrong color, and it's like, well, that suggests something very strange is happening with chemistry or light or some very fundamental science thing. That's a pretty big concern, to be totally honest with you. It's a pretty big deal. Okay, so something I wanted to do on here, because so as you know, I write columns for litreactor.com, a community for writers and book lovers, as they like to say. And it's been harder to promote these, not just for me, for like all of everyone who works on the site. A lot of this has to do with some of the changes that Facebook made, you know, because they want you to quote unquote promote your posts, which means pay money for them. And so we used to get a lot of hits because they would be posted on Chuck Palahniuk's social media, like his Facebook, right? So if your story went up on Chuck's Facebook, you get a couple thousand hits, no problem. But now people aren't seeing Chuck's shit because they're not paying to promote it, which is stupid because it's kind of against the whole idea of, if I'm following, so Chuck's page is like a fan page. It's not like a personal page. It's more like it works more like a business page. But I would be following his page because I want to see his stuff. And this, I guess, applies in theory to things like, hey, if you follow Amazon on Facebook, it's because you want to see it. Because all you have to do to not see it is not follow it. It's very simple, right? So just, I don't know. Well, I know why Facebook does this, because they're trying to figure out how to make money from social media. Like, how do you make money from this? And it's, I get it, and it's also annoying. It can be both. I can understand it intellectually and as a business and still be annoyed by it, right? That's still, I'm within my rights. Anyway, point being, not enough people are getting exposed to these articles. And I do sometimes work pretty hard on them. So I wanted to use this podcast today. I'm going to read one of my columns out loud. Because it's one that I worked pretty hard on, and it's one I actually believe in. And like, I do work pretty hard on on these and believe in them, quote unquote. But this is one that had a special place in my heart, and not a lot of people, I think, saw it or experienced it. I would encourage you, if you'd like, to share this article. Or you can share this podcast as a form of doing that, but just link someone to it, because now you will have quote-unquote read it. It's kind of the audiobook version of the article, right? It's about Amy Hempel, who's a writer I enjoy, and her new book is called Sing to It, and the article is called Amy Hempel, Sing to It, and the Death of Minimalism. Amy Hempel has a new book out. This news raises one of two reactions from people. The one I'm looking for is eyes wide open, breath held, the kind of physical reaction that comes about when the internal feeling is that we're lucky to be alive now, in this moment, when there's another Amy Hempel book. The reaction I get, always, is non-physical. It's summed up in a single word. Who? Amy Hempel is great. Let's go here first. My purpose here isn't to say that Amy Hempel isn't important. To me, and to a shitload of other readers and writers, Amy Hempel's first new book in a decade, Sing to It, is a big, big deal. If you've never read Amy Hempel, I have a few suggestions. 1, get your head out of your ass. 2, read In the Cemetery Where Al Jolson is Buried. 3, read In a Tub. 4, read The Harvest. These are all hyperlinked, by the way. Everything I have to say about the death of minimalism, I say with sadness. I'm upset that the writers I love never get the attention they deserve. I work at a library, and I'm never happy when I run stats and see how my favorite minimalist authors are faring. As for Amy Hempel, nothing would please me more than to see her book become a huge hit. In fact, let me do my part. I'll give you a link to grab her book on Amazon, and I'll throw it in a few more times throughout this column just to make sure everyone gets a chance. So here's the link. Nutshell, let the record show I love Amy Hempel's work on a deep and sincere level. Wait, no, don't let it show. Carve that shit into the record with the nastiest switchblade you can get your hands on. Is this the end of minimalism? Recognizing the end of an era is hard in the moment. Sure, decades later, it's easy to put a pin in something. If we'd been asked at the time, we probably would have cited Load as the end of metal Metallica. But in hindsight, it's probably the Black Album. I hope that time makes an idiot of me. But here's what I think. Amy Hempel's book might be the last gasp of great minimalist writing. Perhaps I'll be wrong. Perhaps minimalism is already dead. Or perhaps it will die many years from now. Perhaps I'm fooled into thinking this way because Amy Hempel's book would make a fitting, gorgeous end to an era. Maybe it's the beauty of ending with Sing to It that makes me so tempted to call minimalism's end here and now. But I don't think so. I think the ending has been coming for some time. A very subjective, harebrained, quick history of minimalist writing. If you want to know way too much about this and be confused, read Mark McGurl's The Program Era. If you want to know just enough to be dangerous, try Trad Harbach's essay MFA vs. NYC. If you want to know even less than that, and very likely have the knowledge delivered with a fart joke, read on. Creative writing MFA programs have been around for a bit, but it's only recently that they've grown into something common. In 1975, there were 79 places you could go to get a creative writing MFA. There are now 854. That's a tenfold increase. The MFA presents an interesting problem. If I get a degree in mathematics, there are certain things that are expected of me. If I can't find the area of a circle, I probably shouldn't get a diploma. And hey, it's reasonable. Structural engineers need to have certain areas of knowledge so they can engineer structures. Because a bridge either works or it doesn't. But how do you manage something as subjective as creative writing? How do you decide whether or not an individual is good enough to get that sheepskin? Just a note, sheepskin is slang for diploma. You're thinking of lambskin, which is a condom. You weirdo. There's no straightforward test, no evaluation. How do you, as McGurl put it, create an environment of, quote, systematic creativity? Enter minimalism. Minimalism is a style and it's a set of rules. both of which come in handy when you're sitting in front of a stack of short stories that need grading. Rather than delineate minimalism's rules, which will just turn into an argument, I'll put it like this. If you read enough short stories, you get a spidey sense for short story collections that sound MFAE. If they sound MFAE, there's a damn good chance you're hearing shades of minimalism. If the author bio says they graduated from the Iowa Writers' Workshop, you're reading something with at least a whiff of minimalism. If someone calls the writing Carver-esque, you're well inside the ballpark. A ton of this came from the lab/classroom of Gordon Lish, Captain Fiction himself. You might know Lish for his most famous work, editing Raymond Carver's stories down to the bones. But whether or not you know Lish's name, you know him. Here's a quick list of people Lish taught, edited, or published. Amy Hempel, Raymond Carver, Tom Spanbauer, Barry Hanna, Peter Christopher, Yannick Murphy, Christine Schutt, Diane Williams, Sam Lipsight, Michael Kimball, Mark Richard, Will Eno, Don Raffel. Seriously, the names don't stop. These authors were recognized as literary. They were writers' writers. They set the tone for MFA-centric literary fiction. For decades, when someone wrote literary fiction, these were the folks being imitated. If you took a creative writing class or a modern fiction class, these were the sorts of people you read. These were people who were published in places that mattered. Esquire, Playboy, The New Yorker, and respected literary journals. Lish's students also taught many writers themselves. Amy Hempel has made a long career of teaching, and Tom Spanbauer spent decades passing on Lish's lessons in weekly workshops held in his home. Hempel continued the tradition in the East, Tom in the West. And most of us flock to one of the two from somewhere in between, or we dreamed of doing so. While it's not the only school of thought that found its niche in higher ed and structured workshops, minimalism presents a set of guidelines for beginning writers, and those same guidelines carry them through to mastery. This helped minimalism thrive in circles of beginning writers and legendary artists alike. It's teachable, and it provides concrete criteria. It's no wonder this was such a big thing for writers. What about readers, though? What do they get out of it? You could read a bunch more of this column, or just buy Sing to It from Amazon. The other side. For readers, minimalism presents an active reading experience. More on this in a second. Without long, flowery metaphors, without adverbs, without abstraction, without descriptions of what things felt like, and instead descriptions of how things actually felt. Minimalism has an urgency to it, a feeling of being in the place and in the moment where the story is happening. It feels very alive on the page. It feels intimate. To paraphrase Tom Spanbauer, when you read a great story of this type, it feels like you're picking up an old friend at the airport. You haven't seen each other for years. You pick up your friend, go out for drinks, and two cocktails in, your friend says, "Okay, I have to tell you this story." That's the energy. This is high-level artistic storytelling that is accessible to the average reader. Gordon Lish instructed his students to seduce the whole world with their writing. And they did. They totally did. To me, minimalism is like a great magic trick. When you watch a magician, it doesn't look like he's sweating. It's not his goal to make the audience know how hard he worked on this trick, how much effort it took to develop, practice, and perform. When the trick is done for the audience, it looks effortless, beautiful, and simple. A great minimalist story reads as effortless. The true minimalist writer isn't trying to convince the reader that they worked hard. In fact, the hard work goes into obscuring the hard work. If a story sounds like a Herculean effort, if a line sounds written, it's no good. The reader shouldn't even be thinking about the beauty of each line. They feel the story on their body. People read to connect with other people. They want to feel like part of something, like they're hearing a great story from a dear friend. They want experiences crafted with care, stories that make good use of their time. Minimalism provided that to a lot of people for a very long time. Why do I think the movement is dying? If you thought that last section was out there and subjective, buckle up. First, it's an aging school. The 2000s have been tough on a lot of the heroes of the minimalist movement. Here are some people we lost in the 2000s. Larry Brown, Grace Paley, Barry Hanna, Robert Stone, Catherine Dunn, Tom Jones, Dennis Johnson. In addition, let's look at the ages of some of its great practitioners. Gordon Lish, 85. Mary Robeson, 70. Mark Richard, 64. Robert Olmsted, 65. Lydia Davis, 71. Cormac McCarthy, 85. Tobias Wolfe, 73. Ann Beatty, 71. Richard Ford, 75. Tom Spanbauer, 73. Sandra Cisneros, who did some minimalist work, is among the young in the group at only 64. Flannery O'Connor and Raymond Carver are long gone, rest their souls. Ernest Hemingway, the classic example, has been gone almost 60 years. Minimalism is an aging movement, which isn't to say anything about its quality or the work that's coming from the great artists still working in the minimalist tradition. And while there's a newer second crop of minimalist writers, many of them worked in minimalism and moved on to other forms. And looking at the field, we have to be honest, there's not a lot of young blood. Matters of fashion. Even Wikipedia is hip to one of minimalism's key facets. Quote, readers are expected to take an active role in creating the story, to choose sides based on oblique hints and innuendo, rather than react to directions from the writer. In other words, minimalist writing doesn't tell a reader how to feel. It flat out refuses to do so. I think this is out of style at the moment. I think we're in an era where many people want to consume media, books, movies, etc., that they fully understand, and they want to feel that they fully understand the media's creator as well. Many consumers want a clear message, and they want a clear moral stance. Ambiguity is not in style. Truly flawed characters are not well received by wide audiences. Homogeneity. The writers tended to be a little demographically homogenous in some ways. I think they often came off as MFA-toting snooty types, and there's a lot of white folks. Any movement that's samey tends up eating itself. People who are involved in minimalism start writing books that are mostly read by other people who are involved in it. Minimalist books, instead of being food for readers, become food for other minimalist writers. The circle closes, then shrinks. Class clash. Minimalists are an unfortunate casualty of the classic snobs versus slobs battle of books. They started as the slobs, often writing from a middle class or blue-collar background, but as is often the case, those still working saw themselves become the snobs. This isn't entirely the fault of those writers. I genuinely think they're hardworking, and I'm sure most of them are not wealthy. And let's face it, when it comes to publishing, it's a snobs versus snob situation. But when it comes to snobbery, it's not about reality. It's about perception. Being a writer of literary fiction, especially one who teaches at a college, comes with some hefty snob baggage. You and I know writing is hard work, but we also have to admit that it's not like busting concrete or washing dishes. We think of it as tiring, but only until we sit and watch pros pack and move a third floor apartment. The minimalist movement might be tied so closely to its working class roots that the perceived severance of those roots causes the trunk to die. Bending genre. The last few decades have seen a change in the significance of genre. Look at Kurt Vonnegut. For a time, he was a sci-fi guy. If you went to a bookstore, that's where you'd find him. Now? Now you'll find him shelved with the literary folks. The literary folks are bending too. We've seen a move away from looking at a book, seeing there's a dragon in it, and dismissing it as total bullshit. A book can be literary and have a werewolf. A book can be literary and be a comic. We've seen the rise of writers like Amy Bender, who wrote an entire literary novel on the premise that a woman could read the emotions of a cook by tasting their food. It might be the case that minimalism as I recognize it is dead, but there's a new mode of minimalism. For decades, minimalism was used to tell mostly plain stories. Maybe the tools of minimalism are being applied to different types of stories. Maybe it has died, been resurrected, and I don't recognize its new form yet. Form and function. I'm of the opinion that the sign of a great comic book is that it works best as a comic book. Watchmen is a great example. Watchmen is a classic comic because it uses the comic's form to its full extent. It does things that movies and TV can't. Minimalism creates stories that could be made into movies and TV, but it doesn't usually work. We could paw through the sack full of reasons for this, but the easy way to sum it up is that great minimalist stories are in their best form when they're on the page. Adaptation is rarely additive. It rarely improves the work. This is the greatest compliment I can pay to something like an Amy Hempel short story. A story like In a Tub is perfect as it is, and attempts to change it only diminish its power. While it's a great compliment, it comes with a problem. This is why you won't see big-budget adaptations of minimalist classics, which is why you won't see minimalist books on bestseller lists the way you will more adaptable books, which is why you won't see them front-facing in bookstores, which is why you won't see them in the airport bookstore. There are exceptions. Fight Club, Shortcuts, Jesus' Son, all adapted into critically acclaimed movies. While they found their niche, the praise usually came after an initial hard belly flop, not the sort of thing money people want to put in theaters. The feeling. They say that you can feel the dying breath leave someone, that they're at peace, finally. Alternatively, you could hook someone up to monitoring equipment and find the exact moment that brain function ceases. But what does that really tell us? Does that adequately mark what it means to die? The feeling I have that minimalism is dying didn't start with numbers or facts, so it's the hardest for me to talk about. That feeling is the reason I wrote this column, though. As a fan of minimalist fiction, I spend a lot of time seeking it out. I find more and more that I'm looking into the past. The books I order are more yellowed. The vintage contemporaries I love look more and more dated. Some fetch outrageous prices because they've gone out of print, and it seems unlikely they'll be back. I can talk about objective reasons like I did above, and I can make some educated guesses, but none of it compares to the creeping feeling that minimalism is preparing to meet its maker. Let's sing to it. As the title of Hempel's new book comes from an Arabic saying, when danger approaches, sing to it. As she puts it, it's a stance for how to deal with life. When there's danger coming your way, you disarm it. It has a better result than meeting threat with threat. It is just a little too perfect, isn't it? We see what's coming, and what can we do? Let's sing to it. Get the book. Read the book. Read it out loud. Review the book. Tell people about it. Buy it for your friends. Buy it for your parents. If you can't, buy it for my mom. She loves Amy Hempel. If the approaching danger is the death of minimalism, Hempel will do what she does best. She'll make her stand, disarm the threat, and sing to it. That's a thing I wrote. I hope you enjoyed it. It was weird reading it out loud. I don't think I've ever read something like that out loud before on here. So let me know what you thought of it. Let me know if that was pleasing or not. And let me know if you had read it before or not. Just let me know some stuff. Let me know. I need to know. Tun, 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 tun. You know how I do. I can't just like read that sincerely and then end with that sincerity. That would be so antithetical to this whole endeavor. Just let an emotion happen. All right. We'll see you next time. Oh! Quickly. Helpful Snowman episode 100 is most likely going to record on the weekend of May 18th. That's the Saturday. So if you want to be part of it, clear your schedule for the 18th. We'll see you next time.